good morning to your friends on this 2020 different, indeed, St. Patrick's Day, as it's being celebrated worldwide. And this is the Flannelly Show 50th anniversary, yes. 50 years ago today. Okay, there are songs and stuff about that, but enough. I want to, again, welcome you wherever you are throughout the world. And we are live streaming. We're broadcasting through Irish Radio Network USA, live streaming worldwide on irishradio.com. And then our program, and today's program, will be archived. So for those of you, you know, who are either nodding off or getting up or so forth, don't worry about it. But we do hope that you can spend at least the next few hours with us. We're going to start off, indeed, friends, by, and I want to say this sincerely, I don't think that you will need any advice from me or from us here with respect to what you should or what you shouldn't be doing. It's taken us all our time to try and stay within the guidelines ourselves. But it is, obviously, this is a different year. And with parades and social events cancelled right across the United States and, for that matter, throughout the world. It's different, and my contribution to this is to acknowledge the but we all have to acknowledge that we're all in the same boat. Let me tell you about a little bit about the program. We're going to have a lot of music. We'll have some poetry. We'll have some comedy, and we're going to restrict, much as the temptation is, to you know, to air some you know, political views. Don't need them. But what we have done, and when I say we, that's Anya Sheridan, you know, who's the executive producer of all programming on Irish Radio Network USA and irishradio.com. We are going to hear from Tom DiNapoli, and Tom DiNapoli is the New York State Comptroller, and he has his hands full, but he's been you know, a guest on this program, I suppose, for as far back anyway as we can remember. I'm sure the same thing applies to him. We're going to have, he's a Democrat, by the way, and we are going to welcome George Pataki. George Pataki, former New York State Governor. George was the governor of New York for 12 years. He was the governor. He was governor at the time of that horrific, horrific historic attack on 9/11, not only in New York, but he was the guy in charge of the 9/11, how that was handled. Matter of fact, I think he has a book coming out on that and others. But he was one of three people we had, you know, the President of the United States, George Bush, George Pataki, Governor, and Rudy Giuliani, who was Mayor of New York at the time. We also will be hearing from Kieran Madden, and he is the Consul General of Ireland, and there isn't much good news coming from Ireland anyway, but He will, indeed, I'm sure, among other things, bring us greetings from Ireland, and we will send back the same to our listeners in Ireland. If you would like to reach us over the next few hours, normally I would tell you to send an email to info@irishradio.com. We'll personalize it a little bit here. The lady in charge herself, Áine Sheridan, will indeed keep an eye on it. You can send an email to Áine, A-I-N-E, @irishradio.com. And, and we'll acknowledge as we go along some of your messages. Now, again, best way to reach us, Áine@irishradio.com. And if you think that maybe that doesn't Áine is not O-Y-N-A or O-N-Y-A or no, it's A-I-N-E. If you should stumble on that one, make it info@irishradio.com. And friends, wherever you are in the world, we want to say happy St. Patrick's Day to you. A different St. Patrick's Day, a St. Patrick's Day like no other. And we wish you well, and we hope you can stay with us. The program is live, friends. I'm coming to you from New York City, capital of the world. And you can find us either live or later on archived on irishradio.com. Indeed, a very different St. Patrick's Day, but one that indeed we're going to get through, please God. Couple of set dances here, and this is the name of this tune, of course, St. Patrick's Day. First guest of the day as we go to Albany, New York. We want to welcome somebody who most of us in the Irish community know indeed as a friend, a great supporter of Ireland. And we, Áine Sheridan and myself, have known Tom DiNapoli, the controller of the state of New York. I don't know how far we need to go back, but since both of us were young fellows, Tom DiNapoli.
I love it. Okay. But Adrian, as you know, for today, I'm Thomas O. DiNapoli, right?
I have to
point that out.
I would like, first of all, to acknowledge that you have been a tremendous supporter of the Irish, of Northern Ireland, and through thick and thin, you have indeed been there, not only with you know, your investment of New York State pension funds, but you've been there at a time. When I say been there, you've actually gone to Ireland. You've gone to Ireland many times, and you commanded a lot of respect, not only in Northern Ireland, but throughout the island of Ireland, bringing good, not only goodwill, but encouragement, you know, at every level. Again, maybe this is a good day to, you know, to acknowledge your support and your interest in Ireland, and particularly in Northern Ireland.
Oh, Adrian, thank you for those very generous words. And first of all, happy St. Patrick's Day to you and Áine and your listeners. And I've valued our friendship, and I've learned a lot from you over the years about what's happening in Ireland, and certainly the struggles in the north. And I'm very grateful for those very, very generous words. And I want you to know, as an update in terms of our work there, you know, we did have an investment with a specific carve out for New York pension fund money to go to investments in the north of Ireland. We were the first pension fund to say not only do we want to invest in Ireland, but we specifically want to make sure that some of that money will go to the north, because over the years, from my visits there and certainly receiving visits here in the U.S., really starting with, as we've talked about on your show in the past, Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley together came to see me in New York. It was the start of a new day, and they said the way that we can ensure the peace process will continue and that there be transformation on the ground is that investment be directed to the north so that all will benefit from employment. Now, of course, we've had some tough times. The Great Recession came shortly after that, and it took us a while to get all of our money out the door. But that initial allocation of, I believe it was $30 million, has now been fully deployed. And, Adrian, the update I want to give you and your listeners, especially as we're celebrating Irish tradition and St. Patrick's Day, we are in the final stages of a due diligence for an additional investment in a European fund that once again will have a carve-out dedicated to the north. A lot of our investments thus far have been in the Belfast area. I've encouraged our investment partners to look for investment opportunities all across the north, including in Derry. I think there are a lot of possibilities in the western area as well. So I'm hoping very soon to formally announce that in fact, that money has been allocated for the north. And especially now that, as you know, after many, many months of a deadlock, there is a government agreement again in place, so that, in fact, instead of just having the civil servants carrying on the functions of government in the north, in fact, we do have a government again with the elected leadership to carry on the functions of governing in the north. So I think it's a good time for us to send that signal again that we have confidence that the peace process will hold and that, that the challenge, really in the words of that great labor and civil rights activist Inez McCormick, that the only way that the peace process really will last will be if there's transformation on the ground, that whether you're in a Protestant neighborhood or Catholic neighborhood, that you can have a job, a career, provide for your family. That's what is needed to ensure that that positive feeling that came out of the Good Friday agreements, in fact, can continue to keep the peace in the north.
I would, that's not you, that's not new, I should say. You have been committed, to that, for as far back as we know. But I would like to go back to your own early childhood. You weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth, that's for sure.
No.
You were raised in a middle-class union household, and you got to know very early what, the value of hard work and what it meant to actually stretch every dollar. Mm-hmm. And somehow, in 1972, you won the first election and served as a trustee of the Mineola Board of Education, becoming the first 18-year-old in New York State to hold public office. I was going to ask you, when were you bitten by the political bug? Okay. What was it as an 18-year-old that chose to take the, political route that you have maintained through the years?
Adrian, can I blame it on the Irish? I'm going to, because my great inspiration as a young person coming of age in the 1960s was John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. I grew up, as you point out, I don't have any extraordinary story. My story is very similar to many. My grandparents were immigrants. My parents were born in this country. High school education was as far as they were able to go, but that was a big leap forward in terms of educational attainment for my family, because my grandparents didn't have very much of an education. And my dad was worked for the phone company in the old days when we had one phone company. He was a lineman, member of the Communication Workers Union, and was a shop steward. And my mom was a clerk at the civil servant at the county police department in Mineola. And suffice it to say, I kind of grew up in a traditional, reasonably conservative household. But the 1960s was a time of great upheaval, as we can all remember, great division, all the different movements, civil rights, and environment, and, of course, the Vietnam War was a big, big factor. And I found the inspiration from the Kennedys, their view of public service, and the ability for government to make positive change. So I said I want to be part of that, and I was active in a lot of different local issues, including going to school board meetings, and I was, student leader and president of the school, and I didn't like some of the things going on at the school board level, and the 18-year-old vote came in 1972 for the first time, and I said, I'm going to take my civic and history lessons to heart, and we have a democratic system, and it's open to everyone. And now that 18-year-olds are enfranchised, I'd like to run for office myself. And a bunch of my friends got together. I didn't think I was going to win. And we really just wanted to make some change and have people pay attention to what we were saying. And I was very fortunate the people in Mineola, Williston Park, Albertson, Roslyn Heights, the Garden City Park, that's all part of that school district, they actually took a chance and voted on this 18-year-old. And that's really what launched my lifelong passion for public service.
If we can move to 1986, you ran for New York State Assembly and indeed again elected to represent that 16th district in the northeast of Nassau County, and you would stay there for the next 20 years. Can you just kind of walk us through that period and how things had, changed from, that period you were talking about, like the 60s, the unrest, the tremendous division that there was taking place during those years. Running for New York State Assembly, that again was a big step, and sometimes we look at the Assembly and the Senate in not only in New York and say, yeah, but that's an easy job. They're, hash a lot. It kind of takes a bad rap.
Yeah.
As in fact, all political across the board, political views and everything have become kind of a it's like a football match in terms of it seems like. One side against the other.
Yeah.
What was that, the Assembly, and what were the main views and issues when you, that's taking us back to 86?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have very, very valid points, and certainly, some of those years that I was serving, and one reason why I think Albany and the state legislature got a bad rap is a lot of folks got in trouble. There were any number of legislators who got into trouble with the law, had to resign, some went to prison. Some of them were big names, leaders. Some of them weren't well known. But I think that reinforced a lot of negative attitude. I mean, when I ran in 1986, for my community, the big issues were education funding and protecting the environment. And when I got to Albany, I made it my priority to work on those issues and then other issues as time went on. But I've kind of made the judgment that I tried to never forget what I was sent to Albany to do. And my constituents certainly kept me very busy. My part of Nassau County certainly at that time had many, many activist citizens, many organizations that played a role in the larger issues of the day. Healthcare issues became more urgent, certainly during my time there. And, there was a fair amount of partisanship. However, many of the years that I served, all the years I served, the Senate was firmly Republican. The Assembly was firmly Democrat. I'm a Democrat. And I started with Mario Cuomo, but then George Pataki was the governor for most of my tenure. So to get anything done, you really had to work across party lines, and I always strive to do that. I always would joke because I got a fair amount of legislation done because I worked with the Republican senators, especially from Long Island. I said, well, since my parents and grandparents were all Republicans, I kind of grew up in a bipartisan way anyway. And then, too, similar to all the challenges we're going through right now, being in the legislature during 9/11 and the terrible dislocation in the economy, the tragedies that came out of that time. And it really was a very harsh lesson of the need to pull together, put partisanship aside. And, Adrian, I'm hoping now that we're facing this coronavirus issue, we could learn a lesson from that time and really come together. I mean, I think about the 9/11 time and the dot-com bubble bursting. Of course, I was already controlling when the Great Recession hit. You know, we've been through these very challenging times before, and we've gotten through them. There's a lot about what we're going through now that might feel a little different than those two situations, but there's also the similarity that we have to put partisanship aside. So I'm hoping that, you know, that lesson that I learned from those years in the Assembly of having to work across party lines, I'm hoping that those lessons will serve me well as I try to, you know, work with the legislature and the governor as we navigate through the tough time that we're going through right now.
Again, as the controller of the state of New York, you're the guy who writes the checks. When, you know, when at the end of the day we are looking at, up until now anyway, such a divided country, a divided state in terms of the, not just the difference of opinion, but the nastiness that that surfaces everywhere you go. A lot of pressure now will be on you with respect to areas of support that are brand new. There's no rule book. There's no template that you can follow. How is that? I know what a challenge it is, but
yeah.
How different is this one? You have split decisions to make.
Yeah.
And how is that going to be handled?
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, our office is the office that is supposed to be the least partisan and take the long-term view. I don't have a role in the policy decisions that the governor and the legislature make, but I do think it's an opportunity for us to step up the role that we do play in terms of providing legislators, the governor, and the general public with information as to what's happening. You know, the governor has called upon us, and we're shortly going to be releasing our estimate of what the revenue impact will be of what we're going through right now. It's unusual for us to be asked to do something like that because, you know, the state budget has to get done very soon. So normally at this time we're on the sidelines and the legislature and the governor hammer everything out. Well, we've been asked to step up. Why? Because I think our office is viewed as being a credible source of information. So, Adrian, I would say going through this tough time, we will continue to step up, maximize the amount of information we put out there so the public knows the good, the bad, and the ugly, even if the news is bad. I mean,
right.
You know, people need to keep in mind, New York State, any state, we can never go bankrupt, right? So even if we have a big loss in revenue, the challenge will be having enough cash flow to pay our bills, which, as you point out, is my responsibility. But we can never go bankrupt. And certainly any economic or revenue hit on the state has the potential to also affect New York City, local governments, school districts across New York, because so much of the state budget goes to local assistance. And that's why we're also monitoring what's going on in Washington. And we do need, it's very clear, we're going to need help from Washington, both in terms of relief for the immediate problem and support for the health crisis. But it's very clear from what we see with the stock market and other economic indicators, we are, you know, in a recessionary time. How deep that will be, how long it will last, we don't know. But Washington must come up with beyond relief, a stimulus package. We need to keep this economy going. It's different in some ways, obviously, from what we went through 10 years ago, because the problem is not the financial system or the banking system. The problem is we have a healthcare crisis and the loss of confidence and certainly the need for protection that is keeping people home and restaurants closed and entertainment venues closed and tourism being off and people just not spending money in the same way. All of that is having this incredible tailspin effect on the economy, and we need the federal government to help us ensure that whatever economic hit there is, that it not be long-lasting and that we get back on our economic feet as soon as possible. We've never had anything like this. We've never had St. Patrick's Day Parade canceled in New York City.
Right.
We've never had our masses canceled. Even in my diocese now, even Easter services, right, they've already started to be canceled. We've never had anything like this. We don't have a playbook. So What we will try to do in the controller's office is what we always do, be credible, give solid information, help guide to ensure that we make the best possible decisions, even if we have tough choices on how we manage our budgets and our spending in New York.
I want to thank you. Thank you for your time, Tom DiNapoli. And as it's also, as I say, not only do we value you, personally your friendship, but you have been, a steady, at times when controversy is rolling at its highest, we appreciate the fact that you're there. You're the steady hand. And again, in particular, I think it's appropriate, as you have every St. Patrick's Day, joined us on this one. Tom DiNapoli, Comptroller of the State of New York, thank you. Thank you for your
Adrian,
time.
Adrian, thank you for your steady hand, and happy anniversary. Keep the show going.
Thank you. Thanks again. Okay, Tom DiNapoli. Friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Okay. We have, obviously there are so many concerns that we have at the moment, and it's good to get somebody, the least partisan person that we know on the political scene. And again, we are very happy that he took the time out to enjoy and to pass on his greetings and just give us an idea and assure us that money will not affect the crisis that we are in. Thought that would be a good idea to invite him on, and it was great that he did.
There are wild and rocky hills on the coast of Donegal. The fishermen are hardy, brave and free. And the big Atlantic swell is a thing they know right well, as they fight to take a living from the sea. With the pleasant rolling sea and the herring running free, the feet are riding gently through the foam. When the boats are loaded down, they'll be singing in the town. When the boys and Jimmy begs from rolling home. Now you've done your rubber boots, you've got your oysters on. You check your gear to see that it's okay. And your jumper keeps you warm, for it's cold before the dawn. Then you're ready to begin another day. With the pleasant rolling sea and the herring running free, the fleet are riding gently through the foam. When the boats are loaded down, they'll be singing in the town. When the boys and giddy bags come rolling home. Now the weather's blowing rough and the work is very tough, and the ropes will raise the welts upon your hands. But you'll never leave the sea, or whoever you may be, when it's in your blooded heart to live on land. With the pleasant rolling sea and the herring running free, the fleet all riding gently through the foam. When the boats are loaded down, they'll be singing in the town. When the boys from Kennebec come rolling home. Well, there's purple off the hill, there's green down by the shore. The sun has cast its gold upon the sea, and there's silver down below, where the herring fishes go. When they catch them, they'll be gold for you and me. With the pleasant rolling sea and the herring running free, the feet are riding gently through the foam. When the boats are loaded down, they'll be singing in the town. When the boys from Kennebec come rolling home. who wakes the pleasant rolling sea, and the herring running free, the pigeon riding gently through the foam. When the boats are loaded down, they'll be singing in the town, when the boys from Killybeg come rolling home. When the boys from Killybeg come rolling home.
Boys of Killybeg, okay. Yes, indeed, and a great Donegal song. And who better to sing it than Mr. Donegal himself, Daniel O'Donnell. Friends, we have, coming up in a little while, I'll give you a little bit of a break here. We are going to be speaking with the Consul General of Ireland, Kieran Madden, and then George Pataki. That'll be around noontime. George Pataki will be joining us, Governor George. Many would say, the finest governor we ever had, but this is not a time to start analyzing that. Because if our fellow here now, I really need to say that under the toughest of circumstances, our governor, Governor Cuomo, is doing an amazing job and has taken the lead in getting and taking care of New York City, not just New York City, New York State. And in fact, he has indeed gotten together so that everybody is pretty much on the same page, the governors of Connecticut and the governor of New Jersey, Governor Murphy, and they're getting together regardless of political affiliation. They're doing a good job. All right. New York gals, where are you?
Awake, you sexy, my dear Annie. Oh, you New York girl, can't you dance the polka?
And as I went down the Broadway one morning in July, a Yankee mate, he asked me trade in a sailor's shop inside.
And away, you sexy, my dear Annie.
Tom DiNapoli there, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, mentioned his interest in politics began, with the Kennedys, with John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. When John F. Kennedy visited Ireland, obviously it meant a lot. He very genuinely, spoke of his love for Ireland. He went to Ireland at actually the right time, because Ireland was struggling economically. The best thing Ireland was doing at the time was exporting their own citizens. There was very little money around, next to no opportunity. And yes, it was a great and inspiring visit from the President of the United States. Now, in our archives, we'd like to bring you back to that period of time when, on the radio days, back then, because radio was really the one of the only mediums where we could get, you know, significant recordings broadcast. And we want to take you to Dublin and to a fellow who indeed became a legend as a radio broadcaster, and he would go on to other areas as well. But I want to just bring it back to those days and to Terry Wogan on the visit of John F. Kennedy. And there will be some commentary from there as well. We'll get it.
President Kennedy's open car. He's past the Bank of Ireland. He's coming past Foster Place. The crowd are cheering, attempting to break the police cordons to shake President Kennedy by the hand, but they're being well held back. And now he's standing up, he's waving, he's smiling warmly. If there was any sign of that back injury, there's no sign of it now. He's full of energy, looking bronzed and fit, smiling, big white smile under his patch of brown hair. The crowd roaring and cheering. All around, there are people hanging precariously over the roof. And now they're throwing all sorts of what would be in Wall Street ticker tape, but I'm sure here is only CIE bus rolls. And the crowd are attempting to encroach on to the road to shake President Kennedy by the hand. He has this crowd of people running alongside the car that are adding to the crowd. Now they've broken the police cordon, but they're being held off by the motorcycle escort. President Kennedy, as I lean out this window to get a better view, waving to the crowd, smiling. And they wave back, throw confetti, streamers, flags. And now the president's car has gone out of my sight and it's followed by the car tending a teacher, Sean Lamass, and the American ambassador, Mr. McCloskey.
I was selected to be one of the commentators on the Kennedy visit. Let's face it, everybody working in RTE was selected to be a commentator because it was such a huge outside broadcast, an enormously ambitious thing for RTE to do. It's rather like the opening night of RTE television. I mean, the thing was being done on a wing and a prayer. But anyway, there I was at the very bottom. I think it was of Dame Street in some eerie there. And my job was to pick up the Kennedy cavalcade, or motorcade, as it came round the august pillars of the Bank of Ireland and swept past Trinity College and down prior to crossing the river to go across to Áras na n-Uachtaráin. It was going to be just a couple of minutes, but a couple of minutes of glory. I picked up the commentary from, maybe it was John Skeehan, and said, and over to Terry, and I said, and here we are. I said, looking up James Street, we're looking at the great Corinthian facade of the Bank of Ireland. President Kennedy is coming round now. His motorcade is in sight. And even as he swept around, he leaned forward and tapped his driver on the shoulder, who put the boot down like a rocket, and he shot by me at about 60 miles an hour, and I had barely time to say, and President Kennedy has come to hand, he's about to cross the river, so over to you, Sean McCrimmon. And I, well, that was great. I've been sitting here for hours on end. I drew about 10 seconds. I haven't even got a proper view of President Kennedy. I never saw the man properly at all. He was a great blow to me.
Come down from the mountain, Katie Doo. Oh, can't you hear us calling, Katie Daly? We want to drink your Irish Mountain Dew. With an old man, Katie came to Tipperary.
in the pioneering year of 42. Her old man, he was shot in Tombstone City for the making of his Irish Mountain Dew. Come down the mountain, KJ. Come down from the mountain, KJ. Oh, can you hear the calling, KJ? You want to drink your Irish Mountain Dew? As I was going over the Cork and Kerry Mountain, I met with Captain Farrell and his money he was counting. I first produced my pistol and then produced my rapier, saying, stand and deliver, for you are a bold deceiver. With the kingdom of the Madar, like father and old, like father and old, his whiskey in the jar. When he counted out his money, I made a pretty penny. I put it in my pocket and I took it home to Jenny. She smiled and she swore that she never would deceive me. For the devil take the women, for they never can be easy. With me ring dum a doo dum a da, white father daddy o, white father daddy o, there's whiskey in the jar. Days when I was courting, I was never tired resorting to the alehouse and the playhouse, and many's a house besides. I told my brother Seamus I'd be off to be right famous, and before I'd come back again, I'd roam the whole world wide. So goodbye, merchant, but I am sick and tired of working. The more I dig the crazy, the longer I'm a fool. As sure as my name is Kylie, I'll be off to California. Instead of digging cranes, I'll be digging lots of gold. There was a wild colonial boy, Jack Dugan was his name. James McAvoy, a terror to Australia was the white colonial boy.
Yeah, great medley of Irish songs there from Al Logan. You know, Al was indeed pretty much a fixture and so much a part of the entertainment scene in what was known as the 33rd County of Ireland in East Durham, New York. That's where a great number of immigrants who came from Ireland, you know, starting in the 50s and on to, you know, for the next three, four decades, when people went on vacation. Of course, you had places like Rockaway here in New York City, but a place that reminded people a lot of Ireland was East Durham, New York, up in the Catskill Mountains. And there you'd find entertainers like Al Logan, Mickey Carton, John O'Neill, and even before that, the McNulty family. It was a great area, a great place for families to go and take a couple of weeks away in a place that for some was as close, you'd get, as a replica of Ireland. as was available. Of course, from New York City, it was the getaway. But not just New York City, you had Boston. People came from so many areas. But if you mentioned the Irish Catskills at that period, not only was it a great getaway place, but you could be assured, and absolutely assured, of a lot of entertainment, a lot of Irish entertainment, indeed. Let's get to, again, we are digging into a lot of our archives here over the 50-year collection. And, well, here's a song, The Heart That Beats for Ireland, and it's by Sheila Noonan. This is our 50th consecutive, and it's definitely, this is a program, and I'm sure for most of us, when we are looking back on St. Patrick's Day, this one will indeed stand out as being very different. But the one thing we can say about the St. Patrick's Day, in the absence of parades and celebrations and parties and whatever, thank God we have a lot of good memories, and we will get through this.
How's your cotton? It's a fine, how do you do? Let the people you're talking to don't talk, and you. Though the talking may be different, the meaning's just the same. How she comes from the bars, or leering the moon. Did you ever hear people say, "Hello there, have a nice day"? What they really mean is how she cut. And your man with the bowler hat says, "How do you do, old chap?" What she really means is how she cut. How she cut and hat, will you tell me that? Did you save the hay? Did the pigs get fat? Were you born nice? Are you feeling cat? How's it going? Most people seem to think that a nod's as good as a wink, but there's simply no mistake in how she cuttin'. And there's no use you being shy when you're looking your one in the eye. Make your meaning clear by how she cuttin'. How she cuttin', Pat? Will you tell me that? Did you say the hit is as the pigs get fat? When you're born nice, are you feeling cat? How's it going there? How's she cuttin'? Some people feel to breach. Well, hello, pleased to meet ya. What they really mean is how's she cuttin'. Ice cream treat me a five to sign. 100,000 times, but the sign I prefer is mine. How's she cutting? How's she cutting, Pat? Will you tell me that? Did you say it's a hay? Did the pig get fat? Were you born nice? Did you feel a cat? How's it going there? How's she cutting, Pat? How's she cutting, Pat? Will you tell me that? Did you say it's a hay? Did the pig get fat? Were you born nice? Did you feel a cat? How's it going there? How's your cutting? Huh?
All right, how's your cutting? All right, if we indeed, friends, in our collection, about the time that I arrived here, 1959, there were a great number of groups, of bands that... you know, we're playing not only in the New York area, but at that time when musicians were traveling, they weren't flying thousands of miles. You could nearly identify the entertainers, the band leaders, in a 50-100 mile radius. Anyway, that's where they you would get such a great number of entertainers, of musicians. The McNulty family, for instance, now they had pretty much ruled the roost on the raw music, the music of Irish America. They were at the time, they had kind of come in at the tail end of the vaudeville era, and so to that end it was. Hold on a second now, I just need something here. Okay, Daniel, yeah. Oh. Hello there, Daniel. How are you doing? Daniel, yeah, this is Daniel Gasuski here. He is, he's Anya's nephew, and indeed he's been around for a long, long, long time. He's a fine fella. Indeed, he's helped us out on the programs here many times. Daniel, special needs, but indeed has not only given all of us a tremendous amount of love and happiness, but also is he's a great fella, and he's listening to us today out in Mineola. Hello there, Daniel. How are you? Okay. All right. You're good? All right. You want to hear some Irish music, Daniel? Yes? You want to hear a little bit of Danny Boy? Is that a good challenge for you? Yes? Okay. I'm getting a thumbs up here. Right.
The pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the flowers are dying. Tis you must go when I spy. But on the path when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's crossed and white with snow, 'tis I'll be in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny Boy, oh, Danny Boy, I love you so.
We have Daniel here on FaceTime, all right? I think he's getting fed up at this one.
And yeah? If he comes and walks, flowers are dying. I am dead, as dead as I well may be. You'll come and find the place where I am lying. Heal and stay and I'll be there for me. And I.
All right, that was a pretty. That was supposed to be actually being a bit smoother of a transition there, but anyway, yeah. How about this one? This not only is this the one MacDonald had a farm, but it has a bit of a little bit of humor in it as well.
MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and on that farm he had some cows, E-I-E-I-O, with a moo here, a moo there,
yeah, everywhere.
Quack, quack here, quack, quack there.
Yeah, everywhere.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm he had some sheep, E-I-E-I-O. With a ma here, ma there.
Yeah, everywhere.
Moo here, moo there.
Yeah, everywhere.
Quack, quack here, quack, quack there.
Yeah.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. Old MacDonald had a farm.
All right. Of course, that's for Daniel, but we also, of course, dedicate that not only to all of, young children, but also this might be a great day to celebrate and indeed to be thankful not only for those with special needs, but particularly those who take care of them. And while we're at it, we might as well take a minute to appreciate and to thank those who are in charge of getting us through this very critical time. You know, we could start with as everybody says, the hospitals, those in the medical field, nurses, carers. There are others that sometimes don't get acknowledged at all. There are a lot of people who, who work in and around the hospitals, the nursing homes, not in a very glorious jobs, but somebody's got to clean the place. Somebody has got to take care of the security. There's so many jobs that where people do not have an option to work from home. In the midst of all of this, I think we should indeed know that there are so many tremendous people around us, and we just take it for granted, like, regardless of the severity of the coronavirus, yes, they don't hesitate. They go to their work. It is necessary. It's a dangerous environment. And I'm sure that along the way, maybe we should take, again, a moment and thank God that there are people, you know, who don't blink. You can take, again, those in the medical profession, those in, you know, first responders, emergency services, the police, the fire department, those, again, who watch out for us at times like this. And these are, indeed, if we're talking about times of crisis, not only for us here, but around the world, this is it. We should take our hats off and indeed take time to thank those who, again, really don't have, because of their career, they don't have an option to work from home, and they're there. To them, we raise our hats and say thank you. Now, back on the turntable here, okay. Lovers, well, yes. And nobody loves like the Irish, at least that's what the song says anyway, by the whole shebang. The Flannelly Show, live in New York. IrishRadio.com worldwide.
Have you ever wondered how it all began? We're scattered from New Jersey to Japan. Two others in the sort of great amusement. How we make as many babies as we can. For years men have wondered why the Irish multiply. It's only now they know the reason why. Because nobody loves like the Irish. The rest of the world just do the best they can. We've got a reputation from places we know. But when it comes to loving, stand back and watch the Irish go. Now the French say that they're most romantic. But a lady named Bardot said it's not so. She had all the fights out the city that any man would ever want to know. Russian Japanese boy, she sure was hard to please. Till one day she discovered at her ease that nobody loves like the Irish. The rest of the world just do the best they can. We've got a reputation from places we know. But when it comes to loving, stand back and watch the Irish go. Was that whiskey made them frisky and much more?
Irish. The rest of the world just do the best they can. We've got a reputation for fighting, we know. But when it comes to loving, stand back and watch the Irish go. Oh yeah, when it comes to loving, stand back, watch the Irish go.
Okay, friends, it is 11:15 in the morning here in New York City, and yes, of course, we are going to be with you for a few hours yet, but wherever you are in the world, we want to send you our very, very best wishes, and for this St. Patrick's Day, and again, our motto here for today is, indeed, we're all in this together. Nobody has anywhere can say that we're free and clear. It is a very different St. Patrick's Day, but definitely, you know, one that we will remember and we will get through. If we don't believe we're going to get through, we're in a lot of trouble. Yes, we're going to get through this. There, again, if we go back into our archives here, and this would have to be, this brings us to right back to the 50s again. In Ireland on radio, in Ireland, Sundays in particular, and Sunday afternoon, you had obviously a lot of sports games that took place, and these matches, football, hurling matches, camogie matches, any of the games would indeed have a they would be commentators on radio, and for many at those times, without television, if you had a great announcer and you were listening to games, competitions, and if you were interested, you might as it was the next best thing to being at the match. And I want to bring you just a little bit of that atmosphere that we had back in those days. Micheál O'Hare was he was the king of radio, of king of sports, as an announcer. And I just want to bring it back maybe to, let's take a live match here as compared by Micheál O'Hare.
Foley threw himself on that ball and played a very dangerous situation. Christie Ring to take it. Now will Christie try for the goal and put Cork into the back? He tries a low hard shot and it's a goal! Yes,
that's
the goal for Cork, and it's
scored
by Christie Ring.
Well, my earliest memories of Micheál O'Hare is going back to about 1950, we say, when I was a young man, and we were fortunate enough to have a radio in the house, and on the Saturday before the big game, I'd have to take the wet battery and the dry battery and take it to the local creamery, which was a mile away, and to get those two batteries charged in order that everything was ready for the match on the Sunday. Now, half an hour before the match started, the crowd would gather, and they'd be everywhere. They'd be around the house, they'd be up the stairs, and if the weather was fine, the window was open, and the radio was put out in the window. Volume full blast, and you'd hear that match all around the locality.
Out it comes, to the far side of the field. Gertie O'Connor in possession now, on the 50-yard line. sending it upfield. Nick O'Connell is moved into the center. It comes quickly to it. And it's working. Here comes Nick O'Connell. Up and on the left wing now. Racing out for Jojo Barrett. Can he save from going over the end line? He saves it from going over. He's tackled by Andy Curran. And Jojo Barrett sends a high lobbing ball across the Galway goal. Sits it up by North Tim. Nick O'Connell's there now on the 21-yard line. He takes his shot and he sends it over the bar for a point. Over the bar for a point for Kerry and Nick O'Connell.
Michal, of course, had a great gift of describing what was happening. He was very descriptive, and the day and the band leading on, and if there was a fellow stockings down around his ankle. I do remember a great hurling legend from Cork, Willie John Daly. Willie John took off his stockings one time, and Michal O'Hare, he's running around in his bare feet, but he doesn't seem to mind. You know, and you could actually see Willie John without the stockings in Croke Park. But he had a great gift of making you feel, and you could create an image yourself listening to him of what was happening. He had that gift that, he transferred it to you as you listened to him on the radio.
A line ball for Tipperary to be taken about 30 yards out from the Wexford goal down here on our right. And Liam Devaney, with that number 9 on his back, to take the cut in. And he cuts to the high one. It's deflected in towards the goal mouth, right across the goal. Pat Nolan gets him, and the forwards are at the goal. It's the goal from Maloney. Exactly 55 seconds gone, and Tom Maloney has a goal for Tipperary. Kick one goal, and the puck out goes about 20 yards out to Tom Maloney. A very short one. He gets it out on the side to Sean McLaughlin. McLaughlin goes in and takes the shot, and it's another goal. It's another goal. The time, 1:20.
The 1956 final. 2 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go. Chris Deering, the greatest of all time. And he burst through. And Art Foley, the Wexford goalkeeper, saved the shot. And Michal O'Hare doesn't know how he saved it. He said, I don't know how he saved it. It was one of the most brilliant saves of all time. Well, I still think, in my own mind, I can visualise Michal O'Hare talking about ring bursting through. He known to beat only at Foley. It must be a goal. Cork must win the All Ireland, and Foley throws himself and saves it. Brilliant, the best save ever. And I still believe in my mind that that was the greatest save of all time, even though I have seen great saves since, and I have, since television came in, and you see goals and saves of the year, and I've gone to a lot of All Ireland matches. I've seen goalkeepers making saves. They might have been better than at Foley, but because Michal O'Hare said it, and because the way he put it, and the way that he roused the crowd, I still think that our Foley save from Christy Ring was the greatest save that was ever made in Croke Park.
Approximately 3.5 minutes of play left. Wexford leading by 2 points to lead the score. 1 goal and 13 points for Wexford. 2 goals and 8 points for Cork. And from the puck out by Mick Cashman, the ball goes way up the field. But Willie Rackett sends it back down again. Teddy Philpott, standing all alone 50 yards from his own goal, gets the ball and sends it up into the centre of the field. The clash of the ashes are blocked down there by Terry Kelly. Terry Kelly up on the 50 ring. Ring in front of the goal is going through. He steadies himself. He takes the shot. It's blocked by Art Foley. And it's cleared out by Art Foley. Oh, a great clearance there by Art Foley and by Mick Barnsley as the ball comes out to this side of the pitch. And the ball goes out on the wing to Tom Ryan. Tom Ryan and Vin Toomey goes to Ryan, trying to throw his way through. His way is blocked by Vin Toomey. He goes back for the ball. He hand passes across the centre. Out comes Dickie Rack at 21 yards out. He's taking a shot. He takes a shot. It's the goal. It's the goal. It's the goal. And you've never seen such excitement in all your life. Hat, post, everything you can think of have gone into the air. And the whole of Croke Park has gone stark, staring wild. And with time ticking away, Wexford lead 2:13. 2:13 to 2:8.
When you sit down in front of a television set and watch a game on television, to me anyway, personally, it's not the same as when Michal O'Hare was describing it. Because he painted those pictures, and you'd have to use your mind, and you'd have to visualise yourself, and you had people all over the country sitting down in their little houses, and their farmhouses, and in pubs, and inside the streets, and they had to imagine, and everybody brought away their own imagination. They all brought away their own memory, and they all brought away their own picture. And the picture that they painted, through Michal O'Hare's description and through his voice, remained with them, etched in their memories forevermore. Even now, if you hear his voice on radio, you'll rush to the radio and you'll turn it up and you'll listen. And to turn on the old tapes and hear his voice, it's still magical. I still can't believe that the man is dead. When I hear his voice, I still think Mihalo here is alive and talking and painting pictures.
Well, I can't do it. I'm going to get a little bit of a caracool and a shakeful in the yard. Till Kenig, cool, I got squiggly in the yard. I got a free player, Kundalok Gurman. Go cool, I got caracool in the yard. I got Kirke, go cool, I got Zukulin. I got flesh in a carte. Need a hill of Agamta or Park of Kirkig. I got Raleigh.
Yes. The great Micheál O'Hare. All right, we have a song coming up here. And we'd like to... we're getting a lot of requests for tunes, and we fit in as many as we can, but this one is for the Sheridans and Tully and the Sheridans in Fermont in Edgerstown in County Longford. And it is John and Anne Sheridan, and all the Sheridans. Okay, boy, John. Bansal Hill.
To Ireland I did fly. I stepped on board a vision and followed with the wind. Till next I came to anchor at the cross on the day before the fair, when Ireland's sons and daughters and friends assembled there, the young, the old, the brave and the bold, their duty to fulfill, as the parish church of from
introduction, friends, to my next guest. Here's a song that, and a recording go back to the 50s. It's the McNulty family in the voice of the country.
They gave me the name, but the boys who gave the history to the arms white and green are the boys who died in Dublin town in 1916. Some of them came from Kerry, and some from the County Clare, from Dublin, Wicklow, Donegal, and some from Old Kildare. Some from the land beyond the sea, from Boston and New York, who had to lick the blackened sands of the boys of the County Cork.
From the County Cork there. Yes, that was actually recorded 1954, okay, by the McNulty family. Okay, I want to welcome indeed somebody who we are happy to have with us today. He's the Consul General of Ireland here in New York. And Kieran Madden, you're very welcome. On the St.
Good morning, Adrian. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And
congratulations on your 50th St. Patrick's Day broadcasting. That's some achievement.
Yes, well, it's definitely a different St. Patrick's Day, and one that I think a lot of people are already aware, but Ireland, as with many places throughout the world, is feeling the adverse effects of the coronavirus. You might bring us up to date on how the Irish government, for instance, is reacting and what challenges they have in Ireland at the moment.
Yeah, as you say, it's not a normal St. Patrick's Day, and we wish we weren't here. But this is a global health crisis, and we will deal with it together. So, first, I suppose the best thing is to look at the numbers. As of yesterday, there were 275 confirmed cases in Ireland. Now, that is expected to grow and grow, of course, as it will here. The Taoiseach estimated yesterday that we could have 15,000 cases in Ireland by the end of this month. So then it's how do we deal with that? And the government yesterday published an updated national action plan on COVID-19, coronavirus. And so it sets out the measures to reduce the threat of the virus, reduce the impact on the health and well-being of the population. But it's also about supporting jobs, supporting those who've lost their jobs, which is important. There are sadly 140,000 jobs lost so far due to the impact of the virus. And then also to ensure continuity of supply chain so that we don't see this panic buying. People can be sure they can get their essential supplies. The continuity of essential public services. And of course, to mind the vulnerable, because this virus is working its way through society. It'll have a limited impact on some, but it'll have a major impact on some also. And they're the ones we need to look out for. And each of us in our actions have responsibility in that regard, whether it's here or in Ireland or elsewhere. So we need to make sure we bear the vulnerable in mind at all times. And as of this morning, I think there were 19 new test centres open in Ireland. And they expect to have 30 new test centres in place by the end of the week. And they're mobilised. Of course, the whole health service is mobilised, but they're also looking to pull in people who have recently retired, people who have the expertise to run those testing centres, because the Ireland chief medical officer was on the radio this morning in Ireland, and he said, test, test, test. That's our main priority. Test, and you can get a sense of the extent of the cases and where they are and how they're spreading, and that allows management.
Yeah.
That's a summary of it. The full action plan is, of course, available on merriamstreet.ie, but that's a summary of the broad goals of it.
Yeah.
And it's not too dissimilar to what's going on globally, of course.
It is, though, we would have to say that Ireland was well prepared and among the first countries in Europe to actually make the preparations to you know, to plan out as best they can at the last minute the number of test centers, and they're fairly well spread throughout the country. And again, they got the jump on it. Really, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't say that, you know, that Ireland, like any other place in the world, are way ahead of the curve. But it does, and it is, it's pretty good that at a time when, like ourselves over here, that. You know, that the political situation on the island of Ireland and in Southern Ireland, you know, an election took place, and that has to be sorted out yet. But
yeah,
that there is no time for politics. What there is, you know, is we, I think, as, you know, as a nation, have... are more than aware of the severity of crisis, going back, of course, to the Irish famine. We've also, as a nation, been very supportive of, you know, countries where unfortunately, there have been many disasters throughout the world. Right here in New York City, for instance, we have the Irish Hunger Memorial in Battery Park City, a great reminder not only of, you know, and dedication to the Irish famine, the Great Hunger, but also the continuing problem that there has been throughout the world. We've been there, and I think maybe we could brag, if that's the correct word, about the fact that per capita, Ireland and the Irish people have been the most generous in supporting not only famine, but in many areas throughout the world. We never forgot the scourge of starvation, of famine. It has stuck with us.
No, I mean, I suppose a couple of things on that, Eamon. First of all, now isn't the time for any pats on our back or anyone's back about how the crisis is being dealt with. There's a long way to run in this, and just to take it with deadly seriousness for the moment. On the Hunger Memorial and all that it represents, yes, there is that collective memory of the Great Hunger in Ireland. And that's reflected in Ireland's foreign policy. It's reflected in Ireland's international aid policy. It's reflected, I suppose, over the last couple of years, especially in the question, in Ireland's campaign for election to a temporary seat, a non-permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council. And that campaign has been underway for a couple of years, as you know. And that's about empathy, global empathy. You know, our position, knowing our place in the world, knowing that we have responsibilities in the world. But to bring it back to the current crisis, you'll be familiar with the concept of mehel, and I'm sure some of your listeners will be as well. The idea of pulling together, you know, that when there's a job that's too big for one family or one farm, everyone gets stuck in, whether it's bringing in the harvest or constructing a barn, that people pull together to do something that's too big for one group. And we are now in the biggest mehel of your lifetime and mine in Ireland and globally. And we're all pulling together on this. And that's what it requires. And some people might be frustrated that they are stuck at home and one, not able to do their normal day job as effectively as they might otherwise, and two, not able to contribute directly to helping with the crisis. But for a lot of people, staying at home and breaking the possible chain of infection is a contribution. So people need to, I suppose, resign themselves sounds too negative, but accept that that is a genuine contribution to what needs to be done. Staying out of the company of others now and practicing social distancing is a part of the collective effort and part of the mehel. And anything we can do to support those who are in the front lines, of course, matters as well. And that goes for here in New York, across the United States, and of course in Ireland.
Kieran Madden, France, the Consul General of Ireland in New York, again, Thank you for joining us. And the Irish consulate, of course, you didn't close down. And you're among those who have to, you know, keep in touch. It's a great source of information. But I would like you to give us that the website you mentioned, that Marion. We don't have that.
MarionStreet.ie.
MarionStreet.ie
is for the National Action Plan, the updated Action Plan on COVID-19. And just again, on the consulate, we're closed today for St. Patrick's Day, but we are open for the moment at least to try to provide essential services. We are working on reduced teams to make sure, again, as part of the social distancing, but we're here to support citizens who, you know, in terms of the normal services that we provide, our goal is to continue to provide them for now. Of course, the situation must be kept under review. And our general advice to citizens is to, wherever you can, I suppose, hunker down for an extended period, get there now. So if you're here in the States on holidays, our advice is to make your way home. You know, check your bookings. If you bring your booking forward, it makes sense to get home now, because people need to be where they can support themselves and be resourced and have support to ride this thing out. And we hopefully have a more celebratory St. Patrick's Day next year.
Kieran Madden, Consul General of Ireland, thank you indeed for joining us today.
Thank you.
And back on the gramophone on the turntable, we have, indeed, it's called by John O'Connor. John O'Connor is indeed a piano player, a pianist, and somebody actually who ran for about 20 years the Royal Irish Academy of Music in Dublin. And he has a world reputation as being among the finest not only performers, arrangers, musicians, but somebody who's had brought great influence to classical music. He took a break from the classical music to record the tune that we are listening to now, and his variations on one of the better known tunes of all time, the Irish Washerwoman. So let's go to John O'Connor and Fantasy and the Irish Washerwoman, the program, the Flannelly Show. We're coming to you live from New York. And friends, again, we're with you. We're all in the same boat, and this is St. Patrick's Day 2020, one which we will remember. In the meantime, we're going to do the best and listen to those who are indeed giving us the best advice possible.
Thank you.
Washing woman there. You wouldn't hear, you haven't heard a song, well, you haven't heard that version, I'm sure, for many first time, but sure as hell knew what to do with that one. Okay. A song for the home country. Sing a song of Mayo by Mary McGonigal. Program the family show. IrishRadio.com worldwide. From Ireland, from Mayo, from Joe Glenn, and it's Take Me Back to Castlebar.
I'm waiting for John Murphy's van to take me to the site. I'm working 7 days a week from morning to dark night. And as I step into the van, gently close the door. Well, the first thing that the boys ask me what I did the night before. Well, take me back to Castlebar in the county of Mayo. It's the only place in Ireland I'm longing for to go. Where they greet you with a friendly smile and bid you the time of day. When I set me foot in old Mayo, I never go astray. Then Dirty Jack, the gangman, talks about the time.
down in the mine. He says he sees him often, the old Dorchester Hotel. If he wants to make a promotion, boy, get down, dig like hell. Then take me back to Castle Bar in the county of Mayo. It's the only place in Ireland I'm longing far to go, where they greet you with a friendly smile and bid you the time of day. When I set me foot in old Mayo, I never more stray. John Murphy does relate. He said when he first came over here in 1938, that was the year before the war, if my memory serves me clear. Bar written on those factory walls, no Irish one to hear. Takes me back to Castle Bar in the county of Mayo. It's the only place in Ireland I'm longing for to go, where they greet you with a friendly smile and bid you the time of day. When I set my foot in old Mayo, I never more was gray. So take me back to Castle Bar in the county of Mayo. It's the only place in Ireland I'm longing for to go, where they greet you with a friendly smile and bid you the time of day. When I set my foot in old Mayo, I never more will stray.
Friends, you are listening to The Flannelly Show, coming to you from New York City. And again, a very different St. Patrick's Day here, not only here, but celebrations and again, commemorations, all different. And that's just, of course, throughout the world. We must get through this, we will get through this. And from Noel Henry's version here, the singing an old Irish song. IrishRadio.com worldwide, live, and then this program will be archived.
Oh, I see the light and the valleys that you feel for lonely. Oh, I walk the highways, the byways, the old people show me. Oh, I hear the songbirds remember the soft words you spoke at the dark in the glen. Oh, I hear you calling me, old songs are calling me back to those days again. Sing me an old Irish song, back the dreams that have gone. Bring me our love once so strong. Bring me the days when we were young and true, and I love you. I love your song, calling me back to my home, where once again we sing along to an old the old days of love, the old ways of living. There was more caring and still loving and giving. I've said it's changed, life's been old, it's rained. Since the summer we laughed in the rain. Oh, I hear you calling me, old songs are calling me back. Those days again. Sing me an old Irish song, bring back the dreams that have gone. Sing me a love once so strong. Bring me the days when we were young and true, and I love you. An old Irish song, calling me back.
Yeah, we hear from Jeff Cleary that he's tracking down Governor Pataki. Jeff, would you mind? Okay. Yeah, smarten up there. It's not like you're busy with anything else. All right. Let's see. It's coming up to 12 o'clock, friends, in New York City, capital of the world. And let's see, we'll do, we get some music here going from Ali Bain, Bill Cunningham. That might be it, okay? This might well be the call we're waiting for. Okay. Is it? Okay. I think we're about to link up with the governor of New York, governor for 12 years, George Pataki, but we'll see. All right, Jeff Cleary, you did a good job there of tracking him down. It is my distinct pleasure, indeed, to welcome to our program, in fact, somebody who never missed during his 12 years of St. Patrick's Day to be our guest on the Flannelly Show. And, Governor, you're very welcome.
Adrian, hey, top of the morning to you. Even though it's the beginning of the afternoon, happy St. Patrick's Day. It's always an honor to be on with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. The honor is ours. Let me ask you, Governor, about, I think it might be a good place to start, would be to make reference to a book. Your book is called Beyond the Great Divide, and it pretty much starts at the unprecedented inside view that you would, you know, that you faced going back to 9/11, when a lot of responsibility landed on your shoulders?
Well, you know, a lot of responsibility landed on everyone's shoulders, including the firefighters and the police officers and the construction workers. And it was just a horrific day, which we will always remember with anger and sadness. But it was also a day that New Yorkers should be proud of, the way that so many responded so courageously. And, yeah, my book, Beyond the Great Divide, I talk about that day. I talk about everything from getting through then to rebuilding Lower Manhattan, which I'm so proud of where it is today.
Yes.
It's what I'd hoped it would be, a place where people from around the world want to come. But it's called Beyond the Great Divide, Adrian, because on the days and weeks and months after September 11th, the American people were more unified than at any time in my lifetime. And you look at where we are today, and we've been more divided than at any time in my lifetime. And how did that happen? How did we lose the sense that we're all Americans with a common future and instead develop into these tribes pointing fingers at each other? And I try to point out that divide, but more importantly, how we can get beyond it. Because as we see now with this coronavirus crisis, you know, we have to work together. We're all in this together, and maybe this will help allow us to see that the finger pointing and the choosing sides in the long run is not in anybody's interest.
Governor, I think perhaps it'd be worth revisiting again, taking us back to that world horror, the attack on the United States on 9/11. There was not as much bitterness, anger, and divide on 9/10, as we have now. It just would appear that we're already just riddled with anger and frustration. What's different now than then? I mean, most people would look at us right before 9/11 and figure we were fairly civilized.
I think. It's just since, well, really, beginning with the Iraq War, we just started to make decisions that half the country disagreed with. And, you know, what I do is I point out some of those decisions. You know, we were told weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It turned out it wasn't true. And then we get Obama and Obamacare, where if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And, in fact, that wasn't true. So we really have two divides. One is a divide between Republicans and Democrats, which we have to get over because we're all in this together. And the second is a divide between the people and the government. You know, American people have just not felt that the government is their government for at least the last decade, that it's controlled by special interests or insiders or the powerful groups on one side or the other. And then it doesn't act to reflect the American people's interests. It acts to reflect those interests of the powerful in Washington. And I point out some what I hope would be common sense solutions where Republicans and Democrats, people on both sides of the divide, can say, hey, we got to stop this. Let's work together. Let's try to figure out solutions instead of pointing fingers.
Governor, I want to take you back to some more pleasant and memorable days. Before we talk about that, I'd like to point out that you were, during the 12 years, and in fact before then as an assemblyman, when you were hanging out with questionable characters like John Deary in the assembly, but you've always indeed kept an eye and supported Ireland in general and Northern Ireland and the conflict in particular. It was something that was very much appreciated at the time, and there were many who say, listen, you know, Governor, you should stay out of that one. You didn't. You took the bull by the horns and you became a very, very strong supporter and a great voice at a time of, again, great division. And we wanted to thank you for it.
Well, thank you, Adrian. And as you point out, I had a checkered background in the state legislature. I did hang out with characters like Deary and, much to my shame, Joe Crowley, and even somebody named Adrian Flannelly. But somehow I survived those associations. But I always saw the question in Northern Ireland, not just as an Irish issue, it was, and my sainted mother would have hung me if I hadn't gotten involved, and my grandmother would have stoned me, but as a broader human rights issue, where discriminating on the basis of religion, in this case the Catholics in the six counties, was just absolutely wrong, and I felt obligated, as so many others did, to speak up and try to change it. And thank God it looks like, hopefully, much of that is behind, and that there can be peace and a better sense going forward. But, you know, it's St. Patrick's Day, and I'm proud of having stood up for the Catholics in the North during that time of crisis. And, by the way, Adrian, I know the restaurants and the bars are closed, but the quiet man in Peekskill is doing curbside pickup, which is legal. And my daughter and I are going down this evening, and we're getting a whole slew of corned beef and cabbage dinners, and and we may have a pint or two. And despite the quarantine and the coronavirus, it's still St. Patrick's Day.
Governor, again, that reminds me of a story that you have told, but it's one. Your mother, who lived to, what was it, 102?
101 and a half.
101
yeah,
and a half.
She
okay.
died. Actually, it's funny. I told Adrian the story that the last few months of her life, and she was fine. She just was worn out. She just didn't want to eat. And finally, one day I go in and ask, Ma, would you like something to eat? And she goes, no, I'm just not hungry. And I go, it's corned beef and cabbage at St. Patrick's Day. And she goes, oh, I'll have some corned beef. And to be honest, that is the last solid food that she had until she died about a month later. So she had a great life, and I was very proud of her Irish background, as am I.
I would, Governor, and I know that you're on the schedule yourself, but I would like to acknowledge that you single-handedly did not forget your Irish background in establishing the Irish Hunger Memorial in Battery Park City, dedicated not only to the Irish famine but to world hunger. Your idea, you again making that happen, a great gift representing the Irish.
Well, thank you so much, Adrian. And you know, I remember the inspiration was our trip to visit my grandmother's home village in Stonetown in County Louth, and you were with us, and we had a great trip. And sitting on the ruins of the farm where my grandmother had grown up, they couldn't own it because they were Catholics, but we decided, all of us, to each take a stone from the basement, from the foundation of the farm, back with us. And that became the germ of an idea, and the Irish cottage built at the Hunger Memorial has a stone from every one of the 32 counties. So it was inspired in part by that trip, Adrian, which you were so instrumental in setting up. And by the way, I don't know how many of your listeners know, but this is the 50th anniversary of the Adrian Flannelly Show, so you should be very proud. Most things don't last 50 days in this modern era, and you're still going strong, and I just hope there's another 50 down the road coming for all of us.
Oh, boy. All right. I think we should take it maybe 10 at a time. Would that be good?
10 at a time is fine.
All right. Among the those, of course, who were not only very involved, but when we were talking about the strange characters that you're hanging out with, I think we should throw in there Bill Plunkett, for instance, and Jeff Cleary. My God. But again, it was a very memorable trip to Ireland. It was a tremendous 12-year run as governor. And again, I think that the book which is called Beyond the Great Divide. It is, you're not, a bit of Plunkett claims, you know, he didn't know how slow it would be for you to finally finish a book that you started a long, long time ago. But it is, and it's well worthwhile. And friends, it is on Amazon. I want to thank you again for joining us, Governor George Pataki, Beyond the Great Divide, Governor George Pataki, and you'll find the book on Amazon. Good luck to you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Adrian. Good luck to you and continued success, and thank you for all you do. Now I'll go watch The Quiet Man in honor of my mother.
Okay.
Take care.
God bless.
Yeah.
All right.